You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you could find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows, like the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored, as well as news, reviews, articles, and more, and especially our merch store. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me in the studio, not the Zoom studio this time, is Sean. Sean,
I'm back. I never thought I'd be able to come back here after exploring Zoom.
I mean, it does open up a lot of possibilities.
It does open a lot of possibilities.
It's almost like magic.
Oh, I see what you did there.
It's just a fiery vision. And every movie, it's different. But yes, so we are back, and we're almost done with our Harry Potter series.
Yeah, we're getting there.
We're getting there. We only have...
I mean, if you want to talk about all the Fantastic Beasts movies, then that's another 3 weeks, and then, you know...
In all honesty, that might be a bonus episode of anything, just because I am not ready for that. I would have to watch... I still have not watched the second or third one.
Nah, I hear you.
I like the first one enough, and I think we've talked about that, but... And if you guys like the Fantastic Beasts series, like, totally cool, but... I had no interest after the first one. I was like, one and done. All right, cool. I feel like those movies would have been better if they took the Fantastic Beasts title away from it.
Well, that's the thing.
If it had just been The Crimes of Grindelwald, or if it had just been, you know, what is it? The Secrets of Dumbledore or something like that. The same thing about Batman vs. Superman. If they just called it either Batman vs. Superman or Dawn of Justice, like, cool. But the reason they do that is purely marketing. Mm-hmm. They try and get those trigger words, those things that catch your attention.
Yes, because Dawn of Justice catches my attention.
Well, that's why they put Batman versus Superman.
That's what I'm saying. I actually would have preferred Dawn of Justice.
I would have been okay with it too, or Martha.
I don't know. Maybe the picture of Batman and Superman on the poster would have been enough. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Yeah.
I also think that movie, weird side tangent that just got triggered.
Ah, here we go. We're all about side tangents.
If they had taken off the Batman v Superman, I think people would have been less disappointed in the fact that they don't really fight that much.
That's fair.
I think if they had just called it Dawn of Justice, it might have been...
Let's be honest. People still would have been upset with that movie, even if it was just called Dawn of Justice. But I get where you're going with that. Yeah. Totally understand that.
So, just like how they should have called Civil War, just Avengers 2.5.
Seriously.
But anyway.
Don't even get me started on that one.
I know. Triggered. It's like
you
I said.
You like that movie. I was just very underwhelmed with that
it
movie.
It sounds like somebody just said Martha. Oh my God.
Oh, no.
Why did you say that name?
Is that Mothra?
Why did you say that name? That was actually one of my favorite versus movies. Just weird tangents. Godzilla versus Kong.
It's a great movie.
Well, we love that movie. And they're doing
Skull
a sequel.
Skull Island's
very good.
Even the first Godzilla is a good movie.
I like both of them. I like King of the Monsters too.
I think even when we did it, I was just like, you know what? King of the Monsters is actually not a bad movie. It is what it is.
I will honestly say that one of my favorite Godzilla moments is when after he gets revived and the sub comes up, mm-hmm. and he's like staring at them, and they did a great job on the soundtrack in that movie. I think we talked about it in our episode, which you can find on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio.
What are we talking about again today?
Harry Potter.
Oh,
Don't worry, I'm still there. Or what is the franchise now? Wizarding World.
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
I think that's actually a smart move for them to get rid of the Harry Potter phrasing and call it Wizarding World, because we know what it is.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you know, they're talking about now they want to do a Cursed Child adaptation. They want to do all these things.
I'm going to see Cursed Child tomorrow, a Sunday.
I know. I'm actually kind of jealous.
I mean,
I want to go see Sweeney Todd.
Oh, I can't.
With David Grohl. Yeah.
David Grohl. No, Josh Groban.
Him too. I mean,
David Grohl would have been interesting, but
as Toby.
Yeah, that Back to the Future comes out this summer.
I know, but like the tickets are still so expensive.
I'll pay money for that.
Yeah, we'll do an episode on it. But anyway. All right, so we are back, and we are talking, now that we've killed 5 minutes of screen time, we are talking about Harry Potter and the Death... My God, what is wrong with me today?
We're
talking
about... Take five.
No, we're not take fiving, all right? We are talking about Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
There you go.
And we're going to follow our same kind of structure. The only thing that's going to be a little bit different for this episode is there's not a lot of new cast in this. There are a couple, but we are going to talk about some very specific characters in this and their general growth throughout the film franchise and where they are now, and a little bit more about the cinematography. Sean and I both have our opinions about it, and of course we'll still talk about the differences, our favorite scenes, all that stuff. But first, we do have some sad news. We do have to announce the passing of an actor that I didn't really know too much about.
Yeah, but he's really kind of popped up, especially in the John Wick movies. He's been on TV and The Blacklist, and that's Leon Reddick.
Yeah, died at 60.
Yeah, that just came over about an hour ago. And yeah,
and it's right before John Wick.
He was in The Wire. He was in the John Wick movies. Just really has become a very recognizable
character. He's got that face. Like the,
Recognizable character actor.
So, fun fact, we are recording this on St. Patrick's Day, because this is what we do on St. Patrick's Day now, over the age of 30. We decided that, you know, we both had to work today, and we're like, let's do podcasting. So, we're going to do our best, but we are still celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, if you guys get what we're saying.
Yes.
So, we're trying our best. We had to do the intro five times.
Four.
Four. Okay. All right. But speaking of John Wick, the reviews are in, and it is getting amazing reviews, this new John Wick movie. Like, there are nines and tens across the board for John Wick Chapter 4, which comes out in about 2 weeks from time of recording.
Yes.
Or, excuse me, 1 week.
Oh, yeah, because right now, as we're recording, Shazam came out today.
So, if you guys are looking for a Shazam review, we're going to try and get one out on a Multiverse Fancast. It should be out at the time of this release. And I think John Wick is definitely a cinematic experience. So we'll probably... We have not talked about the John Wick series at all.
That is very true. And so I think this makes good timing. But obviously, we still have another 2 weeks of Harry Potter to do. But
we can maybe do 1 week. I don't know. We haven't decided yet.
Maybe.
But John Wick is one of those franchises that just is so good.
It is very good. Obviously, the reviews are swaying me. I was a little apprehensive. Obviously, the third movie ends in a way where you're like, okay, there's going to be another one. There's got to be. I was like, I don't want this to get just out there. They've kept it
very,
very good, the first three movies, obviously.
I think the only gripe I have with that franchise is it's very grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But in the third movie, once they had like the armored guys that like... you can't kill.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a little much. Yeah. Now we're getting into kind of superhero territory.
So I don't know where they're going to go with this one, but obviously the reviews are
stellar.
So I'm definitely cannot wait to see it. And we'll see if this is going to be it. I mean, obviously.
As of right now, they're saying that that's.
So, yeah. So
but we'll March is a fun time for movies. Because
it's past the dead, you know, January and February are considered the dead months of movies being released. That's the dump, the garbage dump. Mm-hmm. That's for movies that, you know...
they miss Oscar season, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's for movies that have no Oscar aspirations, usually. It's also too early for a big budget, you know, comic book movie. You want to be in that April, obviously Memorial Day is huge. 4th of July is huge.
Well, when the Batman came out in March, didn't it?
It did, but I feel like it wasn't it like delayed or something like
that?
Yeah,
COVID.
It was COVID related. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think they just wanted to get it out for the sake of saving, you know, obviously theaters and stuff. I think normally that movie would have been a Memorial Day or maybe even a 4th of July release, but you're right. That was, now that you remind me about that, I can't believe it's been years since that movie came out.
It is proof, though, that movies that come out in February or March can make a profit.
Absolutely.
January is still going to be your dead month. You'll get your occasional, like, really nice gem, but for the most part, like, March started off with Scream, which did well, and Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, March is... summer blockbuster is always going to be summer blockbuster, mm-hmm. but now movies have really expanded into that September, fall type area, and... this March, April area where you're going to get solid films and you're going to get movies that bring people into the theaters. Like, I still need to go see Creed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of the franchise, and it's Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut. And debut, French, the language of love.
Debut.
But, you know, you also got Jonathan Majors, who's big right now. He's like...
yeah.
And...
did that take a fall off, Ant-Man?
Oh, yeah, like 75%.
Yeah, thought
and, so. And people talk about that, but like it still made its money back. It still did well. And even a bad Marvel movie is still going to make Marvel money. I still have not sat down and watched Thor: Love and Thunder again, unfortunately.
I won't be watching that again.
No, unfortunately. But I'm curious about Shazam because obviously DC is just... all over. But that's like our biggest news. But I do want to talk about one thing before we get into
what is that?
Harry Potter. The Oscars aired this past week.
Yeah.
So just initial thoughts for you on the Oscars, snubs and all that
stuff.
We
talked about it. We talked about in the last episode that, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once was the big winner. Mm-hmm. Took home Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay. And then it took off three out of the four acting awards, which I don't think I've seen in probably since American Beauty back in the 90s when it took home.
Has not aged well.
Why?
Kevin Spacey.
That's still a great movie.
It's still such a good movie.
But it's, again, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I think we'll be, you know, maybe Multiverse will be doing an episode on that, you know, relatively soon. Mm-hmm. But I watched the movie. It's a very good movie. Don't get me wrong. Excellent. Very well done. Very original idea. I don't see that as the best picture of the year. But again, my standards are different from other people's standards. I never understand the voting. It's always the hot movie. It's always the movie, the talk of the town movie that ends up winning.
Which is weird because that movie, like the thing, A24, the film studio, is gotten a lot of buzz recently because it's like, we're the independent film company. Like that, they're the premier. They did The Whale too, right?
I believe so.
Like that's huge for them to have so many Academy Awards to their names, which don't get me wrong. I agree with Sean. Everything Everywhere All at Once is a beautifully done movie. The visuals are superb. The cinematography, the storytelling, all this stuff. I will still argue that Jamie Lee Curtis did not deserve Best Supporting Actress.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
Because literally throughout the entire award season, it was Angela Bassett. It was sealed.
Yeah.
And then the SAG Awards. And then Jamie Lee Curtis won the SAG Award. And usually when you win the SAG Award, that is
an indicator
that you are the front runner for the Oscar. It is very rare when the SAG Award winner does not win the Oscar. The only time I remember a SAG Award not winning is when Johnny Depp won the SAG Award for Pirates. And he didn't end up winning, obviously, the Oscar. But I agree. I still love that she won because she is she's a class act.
Yeah.
But Angela Bassett is a fantastic actress, and she's also lost a couple times. But
so the way that I look at it is, if you're going to do a best anything, best actor, best supporting actor, best, I always look at the most dramatic scene in the entire movie. Right?
That's usually how it works too.
So for me, I look at the scene in Black Panther when she's addressing not the UN, addressing her circle, and she's like going all out. I see that scene, and then I see the scene of Jamie Lee Curtis when she's got hot dog fingers.
But I don't think that's not the scene to judge on.
But that's the scene that comes to mind, because that's when she gets the most dramatic about
it. That's fair. But I honestly think the scene that probably won her the award was when she's sitting outside the laundromat with Michelle Yeoh, and they're having their heart-to-heart.
But I'm
surprised more that the daughter didn't win.
Yeah.
Because if Angela Bassett wasn't going to win, I thought the daughter, Stephanie Zhu, I can't remember how to pronounce her name, I thought she was going to win.
But I also look at how long you're in the movie for. Here's an example. The Flash movie's coming out, and it's getting a lot of really positive vibes, which is great. I'm excited. They did reshoot a lot of it to kind of fit into this new direction that DC's going. Apparently, Tom Cruise requested a cut of it from James Gunn, and he sent it to him. Wow. And he's like singing praises about it. So for me, Ben Affleck's been doing a lot of, he's starting to do the press and he's starting to talk about it a little bit more. He's talking about, like, you know, there's a big thing about if he would ever direct a DC film. And he's like, absolutely not. Not under James Gunn. And I have no problem with James Gunn, but that's just not the direction that, like, all right, cool. Respect. Yeah. But he says he's in this new Flash movie for only like 5 to 10 minutes, like not long.
Yeah.
And he said, this is the time that I embodied the character. Like, this is the time that I felt the most comfortable, the most at home, and the most best version of Batman that I could do. I can get behind that. Again, though, 5-10 minutes, that's not enough.
That's fair. I don't know what the definition of, I don't know how, like, for example, Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs, one best actor for Hannibal Lecter.
In like
the,
18 minutes of
18
it.
Minutes total screen time. So like, it's all about the producers of the movie or whoever's in charge of that, they have to obviously promote the actor for the category. You could choose whatever category you want. So like, you could have tried to get K.H. Kwan into the best acting category, but he probably would have gotten obliterated by Brendan Fraser and Austin Butler. You have to kind of know who you're up against. You got to say, where does he have the best chance to win? Well, supporting actor. You know, where does Jamie Lee Curtis is clearly supporting actress because Michelle Yeoh is the star of the movie, and fantastic that she won. It's weird. I really, and especially, and I'm going to say it, I've not been a fan. I know why they did it, because the outrage over the fact that The Dark Knight did not get nominated for Best Picture back in 2008.
It really should have.
The following year, they went to the 10 movie category, which I really think has diluted the thing. This is the first time in years that both the same movie won Best Picture and Best Director.
Wow.
I mean, it's been lately where it's been, you know, separate. But it's also, you know, I'm bummed 1 year, but I'm happy 1 year, because it all matters on the movie you watch.
Right.
So I didn't see The Whale. I saw Elvis. I thought Austin Butler was fantastic.
Oh, he killed it.
But I'm not upset that Brendan Fraser won, because I grew up watching Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
And knowing what he went through, I am ecstatic that he won. I'm ecstatic that Jamie Lee Curtis won. This woman has been acting since the 70s. She was a scream queen. She's built her career into being a valuable character actress.
She should have won it for Freaky Friday. I'll say it.
She was nominated, I think, for Freaky Friday, if you can believe it.
What was the scene, though, in Everything Everywhere All at Once that the Ki-Hong Kwan?
Ooh.
I will say it is the scene that sealed it for me was when he's like the famous actor or whatever it is.
I think you're right.
And he says to her, like, he's like, in another timeline, I would have really enjoyed doing laundry with you.
Yeah.
And like, I'm married. Sean's been in a long-term relationship. Like we like, you find those moments with your significant other. Just like the other day, I think it was like 2-3 weeks ago, Sean and I were supposed to hang out, and Ronnie was, and, you know, all of our co-hosts, like we were supposed to go out and do like a guy's night, and it just fell through because, you know, plans fall through. And I'm sitting on the couch with my wife wearing sweatpants. It's a Saturday night. It's like 9 o'clock. And I look over and I go, man, these are the moments that I would have never thought I'd be in, but I would never trade for. And just that scene in Everything Everywhere All at Once, it really just catches me.
Yeah.
But we've talked 16 minutes about everything not Harry Potter.
That's fine. But this is a movie podcast.
It is a movie podcast, and it's our movie podcast. Yep. Featured podcast on Podbean. What?
And you want to know what? Honestly, minus, you know, a movie not winning, or a, you know, obviously The Slap last year, which, you know, God. So done with that.
I love.
Did you watch the Chris Rock special by chance?
I just watched that part. But I will give Jimmy Kimmel. I always get them kudos for not only addressing it, because obviously you have to address it.
Yeah.
But also when he cuts to all the people that are going to protect him, and it cut Andrew Garfield killed it.
I didn't see that.
Oh my God! In his opening monologue, he points out, like, if you're going to come up here and attack me, you're going to have to go through the Mandalorian, and it cuts to like Pedro Pascal and like all these people. And then it cuts to Andrew Garfield, because he goes, and you're going to have to get through the best Spider-Man. And it cuts to him, and he's like, ugh. And it's really funny. Now it's all meme worthy. But yeah, it is definitely a good time.
You know what is always an issue with the Oscars and seems to always annoy people is the In Memoriam segment.
Yeah, there's people get always mad.
People mad when they leave people out. And I'm like, do you people not understand that this show is time? They have to run on a specific time. Mm-hmm. They have to manage these actors. You know, their emotions are going through the roof, giving out acceptance speeches. They're going to miss some people.
It happens.
It happens every year. There's always somebody that's left out, and everybody gets in an uproar about it.
So, speaking of uproars, Sean, yes, Harry sir. Potter.
And the Half-Blood Prince.
So, did you read the book of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince?
I listened to it.
You listened to it. All right. So audiobook.
I'm not a reader.
That's fair. And you know what producer Melanie does? She actually reads it as she listens to the audiobook. Ooh, it helps keep her on track.
I like that.
I'm a reader, or I used to be. I'm getting better at it. But I actually specifically asked her, like, if she had this book, because I was like, I really want. I was watching it, because obviously we do our research.
Mm-hmm.
But excuse me, that was gross. Not going to edit it out. Sorry, guys. But I wanted to read the book, because like I started watching it and I was like, man, I really, this is a great book.
Yeah.
It is definitely one of my favorite books. It's weird. I wanted to do a Fan Feedback Friday where what's a franchise that really doesn't have a bad movie? It's very rare.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I would argue that the Harry Potter franchise doesn't have necessarily a quote-unquote bad movie.
It might have a movie that people don't deem as good as the others.
And based on personal preference, yeah. Not necessarily on script, technical, anything.
I guarantee you, if you pulled 100 people and asked them, what's your favorite Harry Potter movie? I doubt maybe the top one would get more than 50%. It would be all over the place.
It would be. It's very subjective.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of franchises like that, like the Bond franchise. The Bond franchise has some stinkers, but for the most part, the Bond franchise is another one where it's like, who's your Bond? Well, it's not what's your favorite Bond movie.
It's who is your Bond.
It'll always start, who's your Bond, and then what's your favorite movie of those? Mm-hmm. Current generation, they're going to say Daniel Craig. That's solid. He did a great job. Pierce Brosnan was for us, and then obviously we've seen a ton of Bond films, and we did episodes on them. We did an interview. With the guy who wrote the James Bond Encyclopedia. That was a lot of fun. His background was actually like his book, which is great. And Melanie actually got the book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
I think he also wrote a Twilight Zone Encyclopedia. Oh, yeah.
So check that out. Well, I'll link that somewhere.
Yeah.
So Harry Potter is one of those franchises that just has a lot of really good films. But again, you're going to have preferences. I can sit down and watch The Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah.
With a couple of exceptions. And we'll talk about favorites and least favorites and things that just didn't work. But first, let's talk initial thoughts on the film.
Initial thoughts, I thought it was a huge upgrade over Order of the Phoenix for me, personally. Mm-hmm. I thought the story just kept you going much more. It also had a feeling of, now obviously, you know, Voldemort is back. Everything is kind of going to shit.
They're at war.
I mean, this is the last movie where school is in session. I'm just waiting for you to open your beer.
we should do videos sometimes.
There you go. Hey, drink, drink, drink. Chug, chug, chug.
That's funny. Anywho.
But it's kind of the last... We keep saying that the mood has changed, obviously. We're past that. But it's also got that... It's that last movie where there's a sense of normality happening, where they kind of feel like, okay, our lives are a little, we're at school, we're safe, you know, we're going on our daily lives, we're trying, you know, Ron's trying out for the Quidditch team, you know.
Quidditch comes back.
It hasn't hit hell yet. Mm-hmm. It's coming, but it hasn't hit there yet. So I like that mixture of, we're still kind of feeling good, but oh crap, it's coming. Mm-hmm. This war is coming and we can't stop it. What are we going to do to get prepared for it? And I like that. And I also love the interactions between Harry and Dumbledore in this movie.
Yeah, you know, especially considering you look back at Order of the Phoenix where
he's ignoring them.
And they have some great interactions. And one of my favorites, and I don't think we even talked about it, was when after the attack on Arthur Weasley, mm-hmm. and like Harry's like covered in sweat and he brings him in. And there's a scene. Apparently, in the books, they were supposed to kill Arthur Weasley there.
Really?
Yeah, but J.K. Rowling changed her mind. But there's the scene where he kind of like twitches and he yells at him, like, look at me, because it's the Voldemort side kind of. I love that scene.
Yeah.
There's something about internal struggles that are shown visually, you know, like a neck twitch or like, I know we talked about Barty Crouch with the tongue thing. But I think Daniel Radcliffe does a really good, just like a nice little like neck crack almost. Mm-hmm. And I think having the two of them really interact together, and it is a little jarring though, considering their last movie, they didn't talk.
Oh yeah.
And then this movie, it starts off with him ruining Harry's date.
Oh, he cock blocked him.
Oh my God, the worst.
That was a huge ass cock block.
And I felt bad for the lovely young lady.
Oh, she's standing there, looking around. Yeah, this four-eyed freak just stood me up.
What were they going to do at 11 o'clock, though? Wink, wink, Flutie.
Ciao, man.
She was all about him.
Daniel Radcliffe is wild.
Oh, yeah. And he got a haircut. So.
That's true.
Yeah. And, well, Order of the Phoenix.
He likes to ride trains.
He likes to ride the trains. But so I will agree, though. Initial thoughts for me is just that this movie ups it. And this is one of the movies that I can put on and I can sit and watch. Not just background noise. Mm. For me, Chamber of Secrets and even the first one, for the most part, are background noise.
The first one could be background noise because I know it. It's so ingrained in my head that I could listen to it and go and just do other things.
All right, I'm going to date us. I'm going to date us so bad. This is going to be painful. Oh. Harry Potter.
Yes.
And the Sorcerer's Stone. I totally forgot to mention this during our first episode. Was the first movie I downloaded on LimeWire.
Wow.
Yep. Okay. Everybody just stop. Take a quick second. And if you're over 30, make sure you stretch your back out and put on your heated seat warmers. But yes, first movie that I ever downloaded on LimeWire. Not, and yeah. So
mic drop.
Mic drop, seriously. Like, Oh, I can't pick it up though. I'm that old. Like I'll hurt myself. Leviosa. But anywho.
It's Leviosa.
Leviosa. So yeah, that's just I need to lay down. Wow. But yeah, the first and second movie for me, they can be on in the background.
Even the third movie.
Until the last act.
Even that. That's not a knock on the movie. I don't think this, by saying that it's background noise, it's that it's a knock. It's just there are certain movies that just are so, you know, maybe you're so in tune with them that you're just like, I can just, you know, I can do things and just have this in the background playing. It's not that I don't like it. It's just I don't have to feel invested. I don't have to watch every second of it to see what's going to happen.
So for me though, this is like the movie that really starts. Like I like to see it. I like to watch it. I like to like have it in the forefront. If it's on, I'm going to sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the brand new cast members, the story progression of some of our favorite cast members, and of course, favorite scenes and differences from the book. But first, a quick break. Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on a set as a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service. You're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction. All right, we are back, and hopefully we don't have to do another take of anything because I am not going to edit that. But anyway, so we're going to start off very simply. We have only one or two new characters in this frame.
If we're going to stick with just major characters, pretty much two.
Yeah. So let's start with the addition of one Horace Slughorn, played by Jim Broadbent. All right. So in the book, I love Horace in the books, and I love him in this movie. And it's a great expectation subversion in both, where it's like, all right, new teacher, he's going to be Defense Against the Dark Arts. Negative, Ghost Rider.
No.
He's actually a potions master.
Which means
Snape gets promoted to Defense Against the Dark Arts.
What?
So, initial thoughts on Mr. Horace Slughorn.
Just like kind of an old, you know, he's not a curmudgeon. He's just a very like kind of airheady kind of guy. And Jim Broadbent is just, he's
kills
fantastic.
It.
He's
kills
just
it.
So good. You don't know why he's been brought back. Obviously, Dumbledore and Harry go off to try and lure him back to Hogwarts. He openly admits the Death Eaters have been trying to have him, you know, trying to get him to join the Death Eaters forever. And he's been hiding from them.
A great scene.
So you don't know why Dumbledore wants him back. You're just like, okay, he's just going to be a potions master. What is the reasoning here?
And we find out that it's a deep, long reason about Voldemort's past.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in things that they took out from the books and things that I personally don't like in that part. But for the most part, Horace Slughorn is really just there because he knows a very crucial thing about Voldemort that Dumbledore wants to confirm it.
He wants to confirm it, and it's just so hidden in Slughorn's, obviously, memory. He doesn't want anyone else to know about it.
To the point where he uses magic on his own brain.
Yeah.
So Dumbledore, the whole point of Harry and Dumbledore, they're going on this journey to confirm that Voldemort – first, he really just wanted to know that Voldemort created this Horcrux. Mm-hmm. But then Slughorn's the one that finds out that he wants to create more than one. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that Dumbledore wants to know. Because I think Tom Riddle even specifically says like seven. And J.K. Rowling has never said how to create an actual Horcrux. It does involve murder, because what great spell doesn't, I guess. But they never go into the specifics of what actually creates this terrible magical item. And it has to be horrific to the point where, A, horror, Horcrux. I did that myself. But also that nobody else has thought to do it. So you bring in Slughorn, and they have all the things from the books. They have the Slug Club, which is a lot of fun. They have him just basically being enamored with famous people.
Oh, he's all about, like, even in the movie, he has his, like, little wall of fame. Like, every very famous person.
That's one thing about the movie especially that bothers me. He's going house to house and hiding and all these things. And he's like, this is just some random person's house. He still set up all the friggin' pictures.
Well, it's a spell. I mean, it's clearly easy for him to do.
God, magic is fun.
Seriously?
I would love to be able to do magic. Like, just, you know, Reparo. Oh, things fixed. That's wild. So you bring in Horace Slughorn, and him and Harry have a lot of good scenes together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a testament to Daniel Radcliffe, who's now becoming a much more competent actor. What do you think about, though, the scene of him on the Felix Felicis? Because that directly reflects him and Slughorn together.
Mm.
Some people give a little grief to the fact that he almost seems, like, completely drunk, and the pincers, the...
I didn't have a problem with that. I remember seeing it in theaters, and kind of feeling that Daniel Radcliffe of maybe going a little overboard, but I liked it.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was funny. I thought it added something to the movies that really you couldn't do in the book. Because how was he going to say, like, oh, you know, Harry's just very, you know, very, very in a very jovial mood and just, you know, just seems a little, you know, little like he's drunk a little. No, just it's Daniel Radcliffe, I think, having a good time. I just think that's all it was.
It was a chance for him to kind of
show his comedic chops.
Like, yeah, and it's funny because I watched Miracle Workers.
I haven't watched this since the first season.
But... I watched the first season.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the second season because I hate anthologies, but I watched the third season for some reason, and oh my God,
third season is the West?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think they have another one coming out soon, and just, he's really funny.
He is funny.
So I'll give him his kudos. Again, the only actor who I really haven't seen do anything since is Rupert Grint.
Yeah, because he's pretty much stuck to staying over in England. He's in a couple movies here or there, which have no commercial, real big earnings. And I don't think he's really that. I don't know if he's into acting as much, or he's just not. He doesn't want to. I think he's probably, you know, tied down by this, and he doesn't want to do anything more with it.
I wonder what kind of royalties they get.
Emma Watson hasn't done anything since Beauty and the Beast, as far as I can think.
Yeah, but she did a bunch of films in America, at least.
Well, she's done movies in America, yes, but I'm just saying recently. I don't know if she's gone back to school or not, or just...
She graduated, I think.
Yeah.
One of our friends actually went to school with her.
Really?
Our friend Rebecca Mealy. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Went to school with her. Apparently she kept to herself.
I would imagine
as well. But so, Horace Slughorn, great addition. And fun fact, and I know we'll talk about this in Deathly Hallows Part 2, he drinks a bottle of Felix Felicis before the battle. You actually see him chugging a bottle.
Nice.
Which is funny because in the book, Harry still had that bottle with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it to all of Dumbledore's army to take, like, sips to protect him in the battle. And they make mention of it. It's really cool. Oh, excuse me again.
Man, dude.
I know. Terrible. So
a lot of editing you're going to have to do.
I'm not doing any editing. Stop it. You get out of here. And then another new addition to the cast. Actually, we do have two more. I lied.
Okay.
So we have Narcissa Malfoy.
Yes, played by the late, great Helen McCrory.
She died?
Oh, yeah. She passed away a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
See? I'm terrible at this. This is why I have you here.
I knew there was a reason.
Yeah. But so we get introduced to her, the mother of Draco Malfoy. And
the sister of Bellatrix Lestrange.
And it seems like she's not entirely on board.
Yeah, no. She, obviously, the movie starts. Lucius is imprisoned in Azkaban. He is basically, the Malfoy family is in shambles. And, you know, obviously now Draco has been chosen by Voldemort to, you know, take over for what, you know, his father was going to do. And, you know, like any mother, you know, any good, caring mother would be like, leave my son out of this. Like, right. I don't want my son to die. I don't want my son to be killed. So, you know, she obviously, you know, doesn't want Draco to be part of this. Bellatrix being the crazy, you know, wicked person that she is, she's just like, he should be honored. He should be honored that the Dark Lord chose him.
Did you know apparently him and her and Voldemort had a kid?
Bellatrix?
Yeah.
I did not.
Enjoyed the cursed child there, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Really?
Yeah. Mild spoiler.
Wow. Tick.
Anywho. But
it's a musical, isn't it?
Yeah. She's not in the movie nearly as much.
No.
Like, she's
very minimal character. But when she's on screen, she's just... she portrays this woman who you want to think, like, she obviously grew up a Slytherin, mm-hmm. you would think. She's married to this just despicable person in Lucius Malfoy.
She's a great combination.
I don't know if she was a Death Eater. Like, I don't remember if that was ever established, if she was actually a Death Eater.
I would have to check
too. But she just has this, you know, way about her where you're like, okay, I don't want to like her, but she just seems like a normal, caring mother.
She has the poise of Lucius Malfoy. Yes. Like, that very, like, she holds herself well, and she speaks clearly. And, like, she has a very good gravitas to her, mm-hmm. but she also looks like Bellatrix Lestrange.
A little bit.
So they have that going yeah. for them where it's, like, literally, like, you could see she's a Lestrange and obviously related to Sirius Black, mm-hmm. but she has that dignified poise to her like Lucius Malfoy does, mm-hmm. and it works.
Yeah.
And on screen it works, and it, especially in Deathly Hallows Part 2, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about.
And fun fact, Helen McCrory was originally cast as Bellatrix Lestrange in Order of the Phoenix, but she had to drop out due to a pregnancy.
I'm curious to see
Helena Bonham Carter. That would have been interesting.
I'm curious to see what it would look like.
Helena Bonham Carter just screams Bellatrix Lestrange to me, so it would have been interesting to see
Helen. I think she screams up Marla Singer.
Who?
We were just watching Fight Club, so that's her character in Fight Club. But we also have a couple of new characters that have a role in this film, and we do see them a little bit more in some of the later films. We have Jesse Cave as Lavender Brown, Anna Schaefer as Romilda Vane, and Freddie Stroma as Cormac McLaddon. It does have Cormac McLaddon has one of my favorite scenes, where the Dragon Ball scene.
Yeah.
Where he's like, what am I eating? Dragon Balls. And he throws up on Snape's shoes. I love it. But for those of you guys who don't know, Lavender Brown actually comes back for the Battle of Hogwarts and does not survive it.
Oh.
Yeah. But she, oh my God, she starts off not annoying and then gets so, so annoying.
She's the tip. She's like
a teenager in love.
She's a teenager in love.
We talked about it.
Did they say how old she is? Like, how much?
I think she's the same year.
She's the same year as them? Oh, okay.
We did talk about, I think it was the fourth movie, we started talking about how, you know, they're in their teenage years. They're feeling all these things. Like, why do mm-hmm. girls always travel in packs? All these things. This is the movie where, you know, I've never heard the phrase snogging before, but it is used relentlessly in this.
I think that's a very British.
Oh, yeah. Like shagging. It's a similar type phrase. But for me, like, you introduced a lot of side characters that they moved the plot forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had characters come back, like Katie Bell came back, and then she gets incapacitated by the curse.
Mm.
That is a scene exactly how I pictured it from the books, yeah. of her up in the air just screaming. Like, it is wild how well they did that. But those are, like, our biggest cast members, the ones that you're going to see a lot in this movie. Some of them you don't see ever again. Like, I don't think we see Cormac again.
No.
But I know we got Lavender Brown in the books. She comes back. So, you know, Cho Chang's in this.
She gets killed by the wolf.
Fenrir Greyback?
Yeah.
What, did we even talk about Fenrir Greyback?
No, we did not.
Is he? Is this his first
very
one?
Very minimal, but he's in it, yeah.
So Fenrir Greyback is a werewolf. He's a werewolf that actually bit Lupin. And there's more to, like, that backstory and stuff like that, I guess. In the book continuity, Lupin's father had him arrested for suspicion of you know, being a squib or something like that. And he manages to escape and exacts revenge by biting Remus Lupin. And he's one of the only characters that, like, Dave Legano plays him, I want to say. But he's menacing. He's scary.
Yeah.
I think in the books, though, he doesn't have a wand and he doesn't use magic because Voldemort considers him a lesser being. Because for somebody like blood purity and all that stuff, even though Tom Riddle is a muggle, or not a muggle, his mother was a muggle, or non-magical. Like, he's not a pure blood. He's a mudblood, basically, which is hilarious. So those are our big main characters. Let's talk about some of our favorite scenes. Do you have a favorite scene that jumps out at you in this movie?
Ooh.
You want me to go first? Do you need to think about it?
You go first.
I will say the scene of Dumbledore with the fire
against
the Inferi. Oh, my God. It is that is the power that I wanted to see Dumbledore have. When mm-hmm. he is, like, literally at his weakest, most broken state, he's like, I got this, fam. And he just lights up that entire area.
Yeah.
Because that scene in itself is it's tense.
Yeah.
You have him feeding the potion to him, and he's, like, getting sad and, like, getting upset, and, like, it's hurting him. And then he goes through the water, and you're like, oh no. And you wait, and you wait. And then the shot of him getting pulled down is just fantastic. And then the fire appearing above him, it's just really good. So I will always say that that scene, it's iconic of Dumbledore just with the Elder Wands, because we forget he's got the Elder Wand just doing that fire. Oh, still gets me.
I have to say, you know, minus like some of the funny scenes, obviously, like, you know, Ron trying out for Keeper. And then obviously Harry pretending he gave him the Felix Felices for the game. Those are fun, but I love the ending scene with Snape in the tower with the death of Dumbledore, because, and this is why Alan Rickman, you know, God rest his soul, is so fantastic, because obviously we didn't know it then, but watching it now and knowing
that he was in on
that
it,
he was in on it the whole time, that Dumbledore had to beg him, like, you have to kill me. And you see it in his face. Like, he is, he's not malicious. He's just, he's got that, like, just typical Alan Rickman look. But you could just see
a little sadness. A
little sadness in it. And you see more of it in Deathly Hallows, obviously. But
it's very rare that you get a sequel that makes you want to rewatch the whole series.
Because you want to watch his performance throughout the whole series and just see, like, because he knew, I think, as early as Prisoner of Azkaban.
So apparently J.K. Rowling gave a lot of information to very specific actors about their character. And to Snape, she told him, basically, like, hey, this is where I'm going. This is one of the few franchises that you could definitely tell she had a plan. There's a channel on YouTube that I like called Nostalgia Critic, where he goes back and he looks at old movies or more contemporary movies too. But he just did the Pirates franchise. Yeah. And he specifically said that the Pirates franchise claims that they had a plan.
Bullshit.
They did not after the first movie. No. They did not know the first movie was going to be a runaway success. No. J.K. Rowling went into this franchise like, hey, here's my story. Another great example, Supernatural. Mm-hmm. Seasons 1 through 5.
Had a plan.
Had a story. This is my story. And the only thing that derailed it slightly was the writer's strike, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Then seasons 6 through 15 did not have a plan. I love Supernatural, but I'll say it. So for this, like, Alan Rickman knew, and you could see it in his performance. And again, it warrants that rewatch. If you didn't read the books and you just saw the movies, that's fine. Like, that's totally cool. Like, I saw the Count of Monte Cristo film with Henry Cavill, young Henry Cavill, before I read the book. And same thing, Harry Potter, I saw the movie first, the first movie, then I read the book. And then I started reading the books, and then I got ahead of the movies, because that's just how it worked. So for him to, like, again, I do completely agree with you. Like, the shot of him saying Avada Kedavra even looks sad.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to do it.
It's not, even in the way he says it, you could tell he's got, like, he's, like, hesitation. Mm-hmm. He's got a little bit of regret. He's like, Avada, it's like, Avada. Ugh.
It's not said with that same determination as
it
everybody
is not,
else.
It's not the determination Voldemort would have given saying that. It's not the determination Bellatrix would have given saying that. I mean, it is.
Which is even crazier, because for unforgivable curses, you have to mean them.
I know.
And we talked about that in Order of the Phoenix, where, like, he taunts Harry for not meaning Crucio when he says it on Bellatrix. Mm. Another favorite scene for me is the bathroom fight between Harry and Malfoy.
That is very good.
And then when he finally hits him with that Sectum Sempra, and he's just laying there bleeding, it is, wow. Like, even Harry's like, oh my God, what did I just do? And, you know, Snape comes in and obviously saves him, but it's a powerful scene, because we didn't talk about Malfoy too much, so let's talk about him really quick. The story that I would love to read, like, you know, sometimes they'll do, like, extra reading on, like, the story from this person's point of view. I would love to read this story from Malfoy's point of view.
Yeah.
And kind of see, because this is the Malfoy moment, and this is the movie that really reflects what Draco Malfoy is going through. And he's such a fan favorite, which is strange. But apparently when he, you know, they talk about what happens to these characters, and we'll talk about it again in Deathly Hallows. But after he leaves Hogwarts and gets married, he marries another Slytherin, but she does not follow the pureblood ideas and kind of softens him. And apparently the parents don't like it too much, Lucius and Narcissa, but I don't know too much about that.
But you definitely get a sense throughout this entire movie that Malfoy is troubled. He's not the same confident snarky kid that we've seen in the first four movies. I'm blanking on his kind of what he was like in Order of the Phoenix. Why am I? It's escaping me.
Order of the Phoenix, he's trying to get them in trouble the whole movie.
The whole movie, he's trying to find the Room of Requirement.
Yeah, and like he's trying, proud, wearing his pins.
So between that and then obviously the arrest of his father and, you know, the actual disgracing of his family, all of a sudden now he's kind of like this, you know, like he
does, angst is hard.
Angst is hard. Yeah. But I think what it is it's probably all these other people that he's never been a part of.
Yeah.
He's never been in the presence of all of these Death Eaters before because they were all in Azkaban for his entire life.
And also the others went into hiding and they didn't communicate.
So he's like, you know, he obviously is his father.
Yeah.
You know, but you see some of, I think, of, I'm hoping, what his mother embodied in this movie. You see the angst. You see the hesitation, like, do I really want to do this?
So I think the best way to describe Malfoy in this movie is one of my favorite phrases of all time. Everybody wants to be a gangster until it's time to do gangster shit.
Well, there you go.
He lived this idea of pure blood supremacy and this is how us wealthy people live and all this. Now suddenly the shit hits the fan and he's like, well, now it's real. Now Lord Voldemort's back and he's like, this is war with the Muggles and not purebloods and all these things. Now suddenly he's like, well, what do I – now I'm in the middle of it. And the fact that he gave me a job to kill Albus Dumbledore, the most powerful wizard, there's – I think in the books they do a better job at explaining like that he's like destined to fail. Like he sent them there just to not succeed.
Yeah.
And they do – don't get me wrong. They do a great job with like him Dumbledore talking to him. And kind of breaking it down, but it is.
You don't get a sense that Malfoy was sent to basically get killed or something like that. They do kind of work it up to more like he just kind of decides he's not going to do it. Because obviously you see him lower his wand before Snape enters.
And that's one of those things that's really good visually as opposed to the book where it's written. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoy him kind of like the hesitation and I got to do this.
And then I love the look between Harry and Snape because obviously Snape is behind him with his wand drawn.
And you're like,
oh, crap. And then all of a sudden he looks at him and he's about to – he's raising his wand to Snape because he's like, I don't know why you're here. And he gives the be quiet. And
– yeah. Any other scenes good. That jump out at you?
What else? I mean,
I like the Weasley scene.
The scene in the shop is fun. The scene at the Christmas party is amusing, where they're dressed up and all that stuff. Like I said, it's got that best of both worlds to it. It's got the everything is still normal. We're kids. We're having a good time. We're playing Quidditch. We're winning games.
Yeah, thank God Quidditch came back.
And then it's. Oh crap, everything's gone to hell. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought this movie was such a perfect balance of both. You know, it wasn't all just shit. It wasn't all just happy-go-lucky. There was just a very good balance of that. I do like the opening scene where Harry is with the invisible cloak and he finds Malfoy in the train. Malfoy pretty much breaks his nose.
Oh my God, it's even more vicious than it was in the book.
I always love, so Luna, you know, fixes his nose and just the sound is just, oh, it makes you cringe when his nose cracks back to normal.
How do I look? Perfectly ordinary.
Perfectly ordinary. And then he's walking back into the Great Hall and they're just like, he's bleeding. Again, he's always bleeding. Why is he always bleeding?
Even Malfoy goes, nice face, Potter.
And then Ron's just like, I think it's his blood this time, though.
Oh, God. They do some
Ron had some good lines in this movie, I thought.
Ron does a good job.
Ron was just that, like, just... smart, not even smart ass, but he just had some of those like dumb guy lines that just worked well for him.
And so, all right, let's talk about some of the things that we don't like about this film. I really liked the tension between Ron and Hermione. It felt more real and better than it was in the books when they suddenly just like fall in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That is much better in these films, and they do a much better job at showing Harry and Hermione have a very strong friendship and like, you know, how does it feel? Does it hurt? Like all these things. And Ron and Hermione, you could tell, definitely have a relationship outside of, like, even when Harry appears at the Burrow after meeting Slughorn, and he's like, oh, Harry's here? And you see them all, like, peering over the stairs. Where's Harry? I would know if my best friend was here. Did somebody say Harry? Is that an owl? Like, it's a very funny scene. But obviously, Hermione's been there for a while.
Yeah.
And when she smells the love potion, I forgot to mention, that's one of my favorite scenes, the Ron with the love potion.
Oh, that is good.
That is such a good scene. And it just, again, it's one of those scenes that how I pictured it in the book, that it came to life. It's there. And I still remember the trailers for this were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think the opening shot was actually them outside the cave. And I was like, oh my God, that's the cave from the book. And then there's like a shot of Ron falling over and stuff like that. But all right, you're in love with her. Have you ever even met her? And he's like, no. Can you introduce me? It's just such a really funny scene with the love potion. But for me, I will say the Harry and Ginny stuff is rough.
Yeah, it's and what's horrible about it is that a lot of people just were really, really horrible and mean to Bonnie Wright.
Yeah.
And that's not her fault. I just feel like she got so shortchanged, the character of Ginny Weasley.
So we will always say that there is the fandom. And then there's the toxic fandom.
Huh. And this is toxic fandom at its best.
Star Wars is famous for it. Mm-hmm. The Star Wars fandom, like, we love Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And we stand by all the Star Wars. Like, don't get us wrong. There are Star Wars movies that we don't like. And we'll never watch again. I still have not watched The Rise of Skywalker since we saw it in film. Or in theaters. I think The Last Jedi I tried to sit through again, and I just didn't enjoy it. But Force Awakens, throw it on. Let's go. So for me, I will never really be upset with the actor or the fandom or anything like that, because in all honesty, it's not necessarily those people's fault. They're hired to do a job.
Yeah.
So like they're gonna do their job to the best of their ability. And you know, Bonnie Wright does a fine job. Like here's your script, Bonnie. And she's like, okay, I guess I'll do my best. But the stuff with her and Harry is just – it's cringy. It doesn't make sense without the context of Harry's inner monologue, unfortunately. And I don't know if that's a testament of book to film or if that's a testament to a bad script. But
I think it's a testament to, again, bad script.
Yeah. So for me, it's just – it doesn't translate well. It's awkward.
The room requirement scene is hard to watch.
You know what's hard to watch? Harry looking at her like a puppy.
That doesn't bother me.
There are a few scenes where Harry like almost like...
I like the where he's talking to Ron in bed and he goes, like, I can't believe Dean's dating my sister. And he goes, what is it about her that he likes? And Ron to Harry's just like, her skin? Her skin? Yeah, her skin? I don't know.
With her for the skin.
So, I agree with you. The Harry and Ginny stuff, even to the epilogue at the end of Deathly Hallows, it just didn't seem right. And I mean, again, J.K. Rowling has come out and said, like, you know, I should have put Harry and Hermione together, but that doesn't bother me. I was okay. I remember listening to the books and being ecstatic that Harry and Ginny got together.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with their actual coupling.
In the book, it's much better.
It's much better.
Much better. In the movies, it just fell to the wayside. And I don't know why. Again, is it just the chemistry between the two of them just wasn't there and it was just too late in the process? They couldn't obviously replace her, an actress. But I also don't think that she was given that much to do.
No, it poor script, if anything.
Even to the point of her on the Quidditch team. You don't see her do anything.
It's so weird that she's the only one still on the Quidditch team.
With him.
It's a very jarring scene.
I do like that scene, though, where they're all trying out and like he's just like, hey. And she's just like, shut it.
Yeah.
Like, that's Ginny. Like, that I would like to have seen more of. Like, she is.
I'm pretty sure in the book she tries out again, too.
Really?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but. All right, so let's talk about some of the differences between the book and the film. So the very beginning is very different. So in the beginning of the book, it's the Prime Minister meeting with the new Minister of Magic, Rufus I can't say his name.
I like what you did there.
Thank you. But so in the book, they allude to this Muggle, the attack on the Muggle Bridge.
Yes. In the movie, we actually see it.
Which I think makes sense visually.
It was a great scene.
It's a visual type thing.
And Millennium Bridge is like a big, huge thing in London, so.
You know, they show Ollivander getting mm-hmm. kidnapped and all this stuff. So I don't mind that so much as a change, because in all honesty, I was not sitting there going, man, I really hope they showed the bureaucratic scene as opposed to a nice action set piece to start off and show how dangerous these things are.
Yeah.
We also have apparently in the books, it's Tonks who finds Harry on the train after Malfoy breaks his nose. Mm. In the movie, it's Luna with her.
Yeah, Tonks just gets absolutely...
So that's the next one. They do not talk about Remus or Tonks at all.
Like, you see them in the one scene at the with the attack at the Hollow.
But it shows them as a couple right away.
Yeah.
This movie's also like, or this book is the one where it's like, no, we can't be together because I'm a werewolf. And she's like, I'm not a vampire, so it's not Twilight. Thank God. In the book, the Burrow does not burn down.
No.
They cut out a lot of the flashbacks to Voldemort's youth. Like, they don't even mention his mom and the Gaunts, Nonts, whatever they're called.
Gaunts,
like,
Nonts?
Them too. But, like, the whole backstory of his father and all these things, which, you know, it sucks. Like, I actually did enjoy that.
But, so, again, we both agree that we enjoy this movie. Did it feel like it had to have that? Do you think they did a good job in...
They did it with the time that they had and the script that they had.
It's 2.5 hours long.
It is a long movie. We also have Harry gets frozen before Dumbledore's death. Like, he panics almost. Like, he doesn't know what to do. They cut out a huge battle from Hogwarts because they wanted to save it.
They wanted to save it for the big battle in the end of Deathly Hallows, which I totally understand.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally do, too. They cut out a lot of the Snape stuff with the Half-Blood. Like, I am the Half-Blood Prince. Like,
yeah, that was...
Doesn't make sense.
But it was still a great reveal in the movie where he goes, I am the Half-Blood Prince, and then just walks away.
Yeah. They also cut out Dumbledore's funeral, which a lot of the avid
book
fans...
But I feel like the scene where they're all waving their wands at Hogwarts was kind of like
It gets the point across. But any other favorite scenes, things that you wish that they put in, or
no,
blah, blah, blah?
No, I'm very content with this movie. Yeah. Very content with it.
It is a solid... So if you were to give it a Star City rating,
I give it a 4.
I'm right there with you. Wow. Solid.
What is happening here?
I don't know. We're
get
really
out of my head.
We're really clicking tonight. I like it.
Seriously.
But yeah, I will give this movie a 4. This is a rewatchable movie. I don't want to say it's my favorite of the series, because I feel like that's pushing, because the problem is, again, this is a subjective list. So I may give one movie a 4. Give another movie a 3.5, but I can be like, I like this movie better. But,
or you could give both movies a 4, but one is still better than the other.
Like, for example, this film has a very weird color palette.
The cinematography choice was definitely
green.
Green.
Very
and
green.
Even Warner Brothers, I think, went to the director and was like, can you, like, make it add more colors?
Yeah.
And he's like, I want it to look European. That was his, like, they were trying to make it look like a European film. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I understand that. And I really didn't have a problem with it. It kind of gave it that impending doom feel to it.
Right.
Like, even though I'm sitting here saying that the movie has that half, everything is fine, everything is going to hell, the overall look of the movie was like, okay, something's coming, you know, it's not all happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
There's no sunshine and rainbows happening here.
No.
So.
But, yeah. So let's jump into fan feedback.
Oh, this was such an open-ended question. I have too many things I wanted to say.
Well,
this
don't worry. You'll get your chance. This week, what is a movie or actor / actress who deserved an Academy Award? So basically, who got snubbed? Mm-hmm. What are some of our snubs?
Oh,
we have Angela Bassett from Black Panther. Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. Surprised he never got the nomination.
I'm not surprised. He got nominated for Tropic Thunder.
Which is hilarious. For the first Iron Man. I can say that for the first Iron Man. And of course, our good friend Mike. Nicolas Cage from The Vampire's Kiss.
Nicolas Cage has won an Oscar.
I know, but no, it's for The Vampire's Kiss specifically.
Oh, so you actually wanted a specific performance.
Well, no, it's either a movie or an actor or actress who didn't get an award for
gotcha.
A role that
gotcha.
They did. All right, so give me one movie, one actor / actress.
Most recently, DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood should have won.
Fair.
And the movie should have won Best Picture. That movie was fantastic. It's another good one.
You get one more. Just one more.
Oh, where to go? Where to go? Oh,
you got this.
God.
Come on. You can do
Jeez.
This.
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis, Gangs of New York.
Oh, solid. Solid
Still
choice.
Bummed. I mean, he's won 3 other Oscars, but still, that one,
I know,
was,
right?
That one was so good.
His shelf must not be heavy enough.
Seriously.
Anywho. But if you guys are looking to participate in Fan Feedback Friday, it is super duper easy. Yeah, no, I thought you'd like
that
one. Yeah. So if you go onto our Facebook page, Cinematic Adventures, every Friday between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we always post our
take a few minutes.
I'm usually really good.
I just said give or take a few minutes. What if, you know, you're running late one morning, you know?
I'm just going to start repeating the questions at this point. But if you guys participate there, you just throw an answer there. We'll always read it on air and make sure that it's on the most common or the most recent episode. If you guys are looking also to participate other ways, we have all the social media. If you go on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, if you type in the Misfit Faction, odds are you'll find some of our stuff. You can also find us, again, on our website, themisfitfaction.com. We have links to a ton of different stuff, especially our swag, our news, reviews, articles, all that jazz. So make sure you guys check that out. But I think that pretty much wraps us up for today.
Sounds good.
So as always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Levios.